Escape from Plan A.
Escape. Escape. Escape.
From Plan A.
Welcome to another episode of Escape from Plan A. I'm your host, Adam Goodman. And in this episode, we're going to be continuing our series on adoptees without citizenship. And in this installment, we're going to be discussing, because it's the end of the year, we're going to be giving an update on the advocacy around the legislation that has been in a few congresses now about fixing this issue. And we're going to give an update on that, the upcoming challenges, a bit of discussion on, I think, congressional strategy and all, you know, and what's to come in 2021, because there's a new Congress in 2021. And I am joined by a few guests, and the first guest I'd like to mention is her name is Joy Alessi, and Joy is the executive director of the Adoptee Rights Campaign. Joy was adopted from South Korea and discovered she was not a citizen in her 20s. Since learning that citizenship failure affects thousands of international adoptees, Joy has been a voice for the community and has helped to educate both advocates and policymakers of the problems adoptees face without citizenship protection. Now, Joy will be introducing our next guest. So, Joy, take it away.
Thanks, Adam. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us, too. They are some of the most experienced professionals in adoption and immigration-related policies. Rana is an adoptee without citizenship and has been working with the Adoptee Rights Campaign since 2016. Sungkwan Jang serves as the program director at the Korean American Grassroots Conference located in Washington, D.C. Sungkwan oversees legislative and public relations, digital strategies, and education programs. And he has also worked on the Adoptee Citizenship Bill for the last 2 years.
Great. Thank you, Joy. And we'll just get right into it. And I hope you enjoy the podcast. Sungkwan, if you wanted to jump in here and sort of just, you know, I guess give us maybe some history on what's been going on and just fill us in on the ACA.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me be part of this conversation again. And really, thank you, everybody, on this conversation for your years of tireless advocacy and work. I really appreciate it. So the Adoptee Citizenship Act in this Congress was introduced pretty early on in the Congress. So there, each Congress lasts for 2 years. So this current Congress, which is going to expire and, you know, get dismissed at the end of the calendar year, started on January 3rd, 2019. And this is the third bill or the third Congress that the bill entitled Adoptee Citizenship Act was introduced. And although it wasn't enacted, and it probably won't be by the end of the calendar year, we did see the most number of co-sponsors, both in the Senate and the House, joining to support the bill than any other Congresses.
Do you have a number for that?
Yes. So as of today, the House version has 116 co-sponsors. That's the members of Congress who have officially signed on to the bill to support it, in addition to the member who introduced the bill. Out of those 116, 64 are Democrats and 31 are Republicans. And I think it's also worth noteworthy to mention that 34 of these co-sponsors, all Democrats, have joined since September 15. And that's because up until that point, those working on this bill in Congress wanted to announce the co-sponsors in bipartisan pairs. If you have a one Democrat expressing support for the bill. They wanted to wait until they secure a Republican who would like to co-sponsor the bill as to make sure that this bill does not get sucked into, say, partisan bickering and unnecessary political arguments, which we will get more into later on in this show. So that's what's been happening. But as of September 15, when these dozens of new co-sponsors were announced, that pretty much announced or signaled that there is virtually no chance that this bill is going to be enacted within this Congress.
Okay, so you're saying that up until then, we were following the strategy of getting the one-to-one Republican-Democrat sponsorship,
absolutely,
right?
Yes.
And basically, you know, I think what that says to me, that was a sound strategy, like you said, because we wanted to make sure that there wasn't, people couldn't attack the bill by saying it was completely partisan, right? Because if you have an equal number of Republicans and Democrats, then obviously that's like the definition of bipartisan, right?
Right, exactly.
So then you were saying that after September, because there was a longer list of Democrats that were sort of, you know, willing to co-sign or sponsor the bill, that because we just sort of allowed that to happen it happened, that it sort of signaled that people recognized that there wasn't as big a chance, or basically saying, look, we know it's not going to pass at this Congress, so we just want to express support. Is that sort of?
Well, what's been happening was, and this happened in the last Congress too, is that it's been easier to find support in the Democratic Party on Capitol Hill, there was quote unquote a wait list of Democratic members who wanted to co-sponsor the bill. So, but even if they let the leaders of the bill know that they would like to co-sponsor the bill, it was those leaders who wanted to hold off announcing their support until
right
we find a pair. But what happened on September 15th is that when they announced all these Democrats, they pretty much released everybody off the wait list and made it public that there's this many people who've been waiting on the wait list, which indirectly mean that we don't have as many Republicans who are supporting the bill, and we probably won't be able to find as many Republicans by the end of the calendar year or move this bill forward on the legislative process.
Okay.
Joy, feel free to jump in. I think you have just as much to share on the, I guess, the advancement of the bill, both this Congress and the last Congress, as I do.
Right. So I think it's really significant what you've said, Sung Kwan, in terms of the numbers. What you've essentially said is two things. I think first, we had a significant increase overall in support. The total support, whether, you know, both Republicans and Democrats. So the total, this year is you said 116 in the House. Mm-hmm. So
and how many was it in the Senate?
8 co-sponsors.
Okay.
Okay. And was that evenly split?
That was 6 Democrats and 2 Republicans.
Okay.
So, obviously that there's a, you know, large difference in that number. But if we look at the track record of this bill in the last 3 consecutive Congresses, those numbers have, you know, made significant progress. And it's, you know, we all understand this is, you know, we're in a tough era here for, any legislation. So I think in 2015, total co-sponsorship, both houses, I mean, a total 13 together.
Really? Wow.
13 co-sponsors, total House and Senate together.
Wow.
And then,
so 13 to, you know, over 120.
In the 115th Congress, we had a total of 49 co-sponsors total, both houses. And I don't know what the split was in terms of party, but it was a total for both houses of 49.
So it went from 30, what was it?
So it went from 13 to 49 to this Congress, the 116th Congress that we are completing at this juncture.
Right.
A total of 116 in the House and 8 in the Senate. So that's quite a jump. And I think that that's significant considering how difficult of a climate politically, you know, that we are in. And I think that what that speaks to is the massive efforts of the campaign, you know, and I don't mean just the Adopt Your Rights campaign. I mean the campaign across the nation to bring, you know, justice to this issue, to solve the issue of citizenship for adoptees. So we have so many, we've grown so much, and we have so many new organizations and volunteers and community members pitching in and talking to their, you know, reaching out to their members of Congress. And, you know, I'd like to return back to Sung Kwan and, you know, just hear how KAGC has really led this effort for the, you know, the last 2 years massively in Washington, D.C. with their national conferences and other conferences.
No, absolutely. On there are so there's been so much more progress on this bill and on our collective effort over the past 2 years in this current Congress, absolutely. And I'm particularly proud to have been able to see the exact specific things that we wanted to get done in this Congress, right? I think it was maybe a year and a half ago when ARC hosted this strategization meeting in Nevada. The things that we discussed back then to launch as soon as the 116th Congress would open, we made that into reality, right? The first thing we wanted to get done was to make sure that this bill would be introduced as early as possible so that we would be afforded a longer runway to secure more co-sponsors, to hopefully get this bill to a committee hearing, and then hopefully get it passed in at least one of the chambers. And although that didn't happen, but like Joy said, we now have the most more co-sponsors than we ever did, more bipartisan than before. And on top of that, it was introduced early on, and we made more visits, more physical visits on Capitol Hill than before. Right. Well, one thing is, I remember it last summer in 2019, when KAGC had our annual national conference, we drew about 600 people from, what was it, 30 or 31 states. And one of the first policy priorities that our constituents advocated for and asked members of Congress for support on was Adoptee Citizenship Act. And on that visit alone, I think we secured about a dozen co-sponsors. And then early January this year in 2020, when a few dozens of our college students made a round on Capitol Hill, we got to bring in a lot of conservative members who had been previously opposed to the idea of the word citizenship alone, right? And those members include some of the leaders of the House Freedom Caucus, which are known to be not so open to granting citizenship or, you know, laxing immigration policy or anything that has to do with immigration. So that was a pleasant surprise. And we also got to launch together what is called the National Alliance for Adoptee Equality in November 2019, where several members of Congress, including Congressman Adam Smith and Rob Wardle, who are the leads on the House bill, join us and explain why they support it, why it's so important for this bill to pass. And we brought in a lot of our supporters, advocates, but more importantly, the impacted families and adoptees themselves, courageously sharing their own stories before members of Congress. I think that was a huge, huge achievement. I think that made a long-lasting, deep impact that really brought us to where we are today. And with that launch of the NAAE, we also started a online petition campaign through which to date, I think we have 283 signatories who live in 138 different congressional districts across 40 states, and two-thirds of them live in the district represented by members who have not yet co-sponsored the bill. So I think that these altogether have been a very, very effective campaign. And I really can't thank Joy, Ark, and Susan of Holt, and everybody else who signed on to the petition, who've made the visit to Capitol Hill together, despite all these obstacles, and who've been, you know, raising awareness of this issue in general over the past 2 years and really beyond.
Well said. I think so do you feel, and this is for, you know, Joey, Rana, or Sung Kwan, that sort of like the lessons that we've learned, because obviously one of our goals was to get it passed, but, we, you know, that didn't happen, unfortunately. But for me, like hearing you, Sung Kwan, talk about sort of the things that we wanted to do and the fact that like it was introduced as quickly as we could, and you know, there were so many more meetings, and you know, impacted adoptees were able to speak, you know, directly to the representatives. Do you feel that like this momentum will continue? Or do you feel like it's just gonna, you know, that it'll sort of be lost in the next Congress? Because to me, you know, we're talking about all of these, like the increase of the growth in sponsors, and it's like such an exponential growth in sort of support we're seeing from that aspect of it, right? And you know, to go from, you know, 13 to 49 to 124 in three Congresses seems like a pretty big, you know, that's the direction we want to go, right? So it seems like I'm looking at this from a more, I'm trying to be positive and say, it looks like we've learned a lot of lessons of what we need to do to sort of get it passed. And that we should just, you know, hopefully we can continue and build on that.
Well, I think that's a really good point, Adam. I think that, you know, that's exactly, you know, why podcasts like these are so important, especially at the end of the congressional session when people are sort of tired out and feeling like, oh, here we go again, it died. Mm-hmm. And the end result, we didn't reach our goal. Of course, our goal is always to get the bill passed. We've never you know, had a strategy for a messaging bill. This is not just a campaign. Right. This is, you know, we need policy change. We need policy reform here. So that's the goal. But I think given the circumstances, again, the political climate, the difficulties that our, you know, our country has faced this year specifically, and the amount of, distraction that has caused, for us to continue to see the increase in sponsorship is really, I think, telling that people aren't quite as disconnected as we might think, that people do still care. And even though, of course, we didn't pass the bill, what we did receive is the broader awareness, the broader knowledge. We have more members of Congress now aware. So every time a member is visited by a constituent or called, or by the conferences and the advocacy days that especially KAGC is so well known for, this is one more member of Congress, you know, that is aware. And, you know, this is, you know, sort of the grassroots work of what we do. It is very difficult. It's tiresome. It takes a long time. But I think Congressman Smith said it well in a previous interview when he said, with legislation, you must be persistent and patient.
I was going to say, speaking as an impacted adoptee, I think this session of Congress was so important to us because previous to this, I think a lot of adoptees were afraid to speak out and to share just the hardship of what it's been like. You had a lot of adoptees prior to the last 4 years that really didn't have any place to go. And so this has been incredible, I think, to finally, I think, lend a voice to the issue, because I think previous attempts at this bill, I think the voice that was missing this entire time was the impacted adoptees. And so I think going into a new session of Congress and administration, I think as an impacted adoptee and the rest of the community are going to feel maybe a different level of safety to continue to speak out and share those stories and ask for legislation to be passed.
I think, Rana, you're so right on that. And that was part of our vision when we first came together to ARC, was recognizing that there was not only a lack of public awareness and a lack of information, but there was, you know, just not a platform for adoptees to go to. There was no one supporting it. So we really had to create it ourselves. And I think that, our mission, has continued to be that, has continued to be to provide a place and a platform for adoptees to be able to come out safely, to whether it's, to the press or to members of Congress or to their communities. And it really is a testament to their courage, as well as to the resources that we're creating and the work that we're doing to be able to provide this space for them. And I think the USA Today paper yesterday was a prime example of that, where Michael Liberton, was able to come out and he was on the front page. We have not had a front page print, story in how long. I honestly didn't even know we still printed, newspapers. <Right. laughs> So I was surprised to see that. But I was just, absolutely elated, because what that says is we have done our jobs, we have created a space, and we, I think that this is just so important. I was just so elated for him, and he gets the support, and I was watching his Facebook feed fill up too. And that's another thing that adoptees who are in isolation don't have access to, is they do not have access to the support of their own communities.
Yeah, and that's really important.
Absolutely. And to that point, I really want to applaud and thank Adopt Your Rights Campaign for your work, because not only were you able to provide direct services over the years to those in need of help, but also you really got to amplify this otherwise overseen and underlooked story, right? I mean, we got this issue featured on the front page of USA Today, which, dare I say, goes into practically every single hotel and motel room in the continental United States. And a few months ago, it was in the New York Times. A few months before that, it got featured in the Intercept. And then we got a huge, huge coverage in Korea, in both English and Korean too. And I understand that there's also been a few other documentary type projects filming following the stories of the impacted intercountry adoptees as well. And I think all these parts moving together in concerted effort got to really, really, really raise the profile of this crisis to the general public. And I'm really proud of the work that you guys have done. And really cannot thank you enough for, Adam, for this podcast to, bring this to the surface, and Joy and everyone, Rana and everyone at the ARC team, for doing what you do.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You know, we also got, I should want to just add to that is, you know, we have really raised the awareness, you know, with, you know, national press, but we have added the international aspect, the international press. So this year we also had BBC Brazil put out a story in both Portuguese and in Spanish. To their associated
that's
press.
Amazing.
And then we had World News, which is a domestic evangelical news organization. And so they have a far-reaching audience as well. So this is growing and this is important. And what this does is, you know, it informs and it educates. And this is why these sorts of media campaigns are so important. And I have to also congratulate Rana because she is our social media person. And she actually handles most of the incoming press inquiries. And she does a good job of keeping them all sorted and organized and in line. And sometimes, you know, we work for months with even up to a year we've worked with reporters. And that takes a lot of our time. And Ron has just been, you know, that person for us. So that's on her.
And that's on top of all of your day jobs too. So I'm just,
that's true. We all have day jobs or our students. But that's what it takes, right? I think that, and I'd much prefer, obviously, you know, I think that's what it shows how, you know, how important it is to people that it's sort of a coalition, and a movement of people who are doing it because they care about it, not because it's their profession, right? They're not getting paid to advocate for this. And I think that's it says a lot about sort of how important it is. Mm-hmm. And it almost makes it more, it makes it more real to me, at least, you know, you know, I guess like, you know, in terms of, just to circle back a little bit to, talking about Congress and sort of maybe a few nuts and bolts. So when a congressional term ends, what happens to a bill? Like, I know, does it need to be reintroduced? Like, just what can happen to a bill? Like, will the bill change or will just the same bill be introduced? So I guess if just a few details about that, we don't have to get into every nook and cranny, but so what happens to a bill at the end of Congress?
Can Sung Kwan, maybe Sung Kwan can also speak on this and also explain that the rule that has been in Congress for about the, you know, having a committee hearing. So, and we can talk about how we were able to sort of accomplish that as well.
Sure. Basically, when a Congress expires, all the bills that have not been enacted, basically, they evaporate, which means when the new Congress comes in and swears in and convenes and all that, everything, every new piece of legislation has to be introduced and has to be started from scratch again.
Okay.
That being said, I mean, as far as how similar the next bill in the next Congress will be to this current one, I can't really speak to that, but my guess is it's probably going to be the same exact language, at least at the time of introduction. And that is barring a few obstacles being, primarily being finding a Republican co-lead to introduce the bill with, which was a huge challenge 2 years ago. And number two, those first Republicans who will be co-introducing the bill do not object significantly to the current language. And I say Republican because with the huge confidence that the current lead, Congressman Adam Smith, who's a Democrat out of Washington State, will be the one introducing the bill again next Congress, as he has for the past three Congresses.
And who is the Republican co-lead this time around?
It was Congressman Rob Woodall, who represents suburban Atlanta, but unfortunately, he decided not to run for re-election, and that district.
Mm-hmm. Sorry to cut in, but I did have I did speak to Congressman Woodall, a few months ago to get a statement from him. So quickly, we're going to share one clip from my conversation with Rep. Woodall, and then we will continue on with the rest of the pod.
Justice is exactly what we're talking about, Adam. Some people, when they're thinking about legislation on the floor of the House, they're thinking about adding new benefits to someone or taking benefits away from someone. They're thinking about changing the law in terms of picking winners and losers. Those are legitimate policy debates, but that is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about righting a wrong. There's absolutely no one in the United States Congress, not this year, not last year, not 10 years ago, not 30 years ago, who intended for these children, now adults, to have gotten left out of the system. No one wanted this. This was a mistake that we have the ability to fix. And I think that's one of the reasons it's so hard to get through the static of the public policy debate, is that folks are used to thinking about what Congress does in terms of doing something new, of changing the rules. We don't usually have an opportunity simply to right the wrongs of the past, but that is the opportunity we have today, and that's why I'm so optimistic that we're going to be able to get this done.
Thanks to Rep. Woodall for his time and statement, and we can continue on with the rest of the pod.
Well, speaking of Congressman Woodall, if I can digress just for a bit, going back to your previous question, Adam, my biggest concern for the new Congress is that the incoming Congress will be more polarized, more politically polarized than ever before, as in we are going to have fewer members near the, the center of the political spectrum, right? Whether that be a Democrat or a Republican. And typically, so far, the Republicans who co-sponsored the Adoptive Citizenship Act have been those center-right or what you call, quote-unquote, compassionate conservatives, right? Of which Congressman Woodall was one. And there's this wonderful, absolutely electrifying floor speech that he delivered regarding this bill of, actually last November, right, as we were about to launch the NAAE, where he says, if we can't pass a common sense bill, compassionate bill like this, then Congress has no excuse to exist, or something to that effect. And I'll send you the clip too, Adam, because it's just an absolutely invaluable verbatim to, I think, leave in the records. But to my point, so since the incoming newly elected members in the Democratic Party are more progressive than the existing members, and the incoming freshman Republican members are more conservative than the existing members, I worry that it would be more difficult to court their support for this bill and for this issue in the new year. Although I do have a lot of optimism based on the progress we've made over the past 2+ years, and based on the fact that the incoming administration will hopefully be looking at this issue with more open arms and open hearts. Those existing members who have co-sponsored this bill either this year or the year before that will continue to co-sponsor and support this issue again in the new year. To reaffirm Joy's point, there's a quote that I like to maybe a little too often cite. It goes something like, people overestimate the rate of change, but they underestimate the impact of change, right? Although we weren't able to pass this bill in the past 2 years or in the past 4 or 6 years, we have certainly made a lot of progress, and these achievements are very much visible too. And I like to see them as these little seeds that we've been sowing And I think they're really, really, really close to blossoming into something that we can, you know, bring across the finish line in the next Congress. But that's, of course, requires the bill to be reintroduced in the new Congress, hopefully earlier on than it was in the 116th Congress. And we have to start collecting and gathering co-sponsors and supporters again from scratch, which means we have to reach every member of Congress again and deliver all these letters that we've signed in the past 2 years again with fresh addresses and names, but our goal is still to reach the magic number of 100 members in the House, bipartisan co-sponsors, which is said to be the number, quote unquote, required for a bill to get a full committee hearing. If a bill doesn't get a full committee hearing or gets voted out of a committee, it can't advance to the full floor where the entire chamber votes on the bill. Until we get to that, it really isn't going to get anywhere. So that's the major milestone that we're all hopefully trying to sprint towards.
No, thanks for that. And I think it's important to note, I think just for the listeners and people, is that one of the first steps for a bill is to get through committee. And if it can't get through committee, like Sun Quan said, then it can't even be voted on by the full House of, you know, the House of Representatives or at all. So, you know, that's a very, very important step. And when you say 100 sponsors, bipartisan, do you mean 50 Democrats and 50 Republicans?
Right.
Okay.
Or as close to it as possible.
Or as close to it, right. And that's not sort of like a number that's like an official threshold. That just is that just sort of what people feel like it would show enough support that the committee would feel compelled to have a hearing on it?
I don't think that's listed on the rule books of the House, but that's sort of like the unspoken rule, the conventional wisdom is what I've been told. And Joy, if you you might actually know a little bit more on that front than I do, if you have anything to add.
I am under the impression that it's a matter of under the direction of the Speaker of the House. And so, you know, I'm assuming, and this is me speculating, I'm assuming the idea is pretty much what we're saying is that, look, you know, there's so much on the plates of Congress and our government that's, you know, obviously by the time it gets a bill or an issue reaches the federal level, it's pretty important, right? So everything is important. And so there has to be, you know, significant support for them to, you know, feel like it's going to actually, make a difference and, you know, go somewhere.
I'm frustrated just that we have adoptees who can't get driver's licenses, they can't drive, they can't fly, they can't get medical, you know, all these horrible things are happening to this population. And we, outside of the adoptee communities, has any sense of urgency. That's the thing that's really difficult for me every day to live with, is that this population of adoptees were not important enough to make sure that our lives stay on track. We're all taxpayers. We're all contributing. We have families here. You know, we've been here 40 to 60 years in the United States and American families. And I like to always add that the majority, or quite a few people that we've come across on these cases, their parents served in the military. And that too doesn't seem to be important enough for Congress to do anything, when they completely always do say that, you know, the military is a priority and, and all of that. But
yeah,
we're family members of a lot of different branches of military, and still we're sitting here today after our 20 years struggling. And I have a really hard time dealing with that. And
I totally agree with you.
But it's hard. It's hard for the community to, you know, as every day passes, to watch people die.
And is the rate of change, you know, in terms of security policy speeds up these, you know, the impact has, you know, a real tangible effect on adoptees who just don't even have the right documentation. And I had a case this week come to my attention where it's something that I hadn't really thought too much about until now, but I realized adoptees without, and this is the biggest problem, right, is having consistent documentation, they are vulnerable to identity theft. And when your identity has been stolen and money has been stolen from you and you have, you know, are on the hook for this, if you can't sort it out, if you can't prove who you are and you have consistent documentation that says, you know, what your name is,
and you'll be on the hook for whatever that is.
Acquired that name, then you are in pretty big trouble.
Right, because then they won't help you sort of discharge whatever that debt is, right?
Oh, it's...
Or all the other stuff that can happen with identity theft. So you'll be on the hook.
Right.
Crazy. Yeah, that is something I wouldn't have thought of either. But now that you mention it, it makes sense that adoptees without citizenship or consistent paperwork would be vulnerable to that.
Right. So it's a real issue, and it creates the policies that we're seeing, you know, increase around, you know, a security and immigration or, you know, just sort of the, you know, whatever the identification requirements are. These are the toughest issues for adoptees to get around. These will stop you dead in your tracks if you cannot prove who you are any longer and what sort of status you have. You are not going to go very far.
It frustrates me to know that every day that Congress fails to act on an issue like this can lead to a life being lost. Right.
Oh yeah.
If not really impacted, at the very least, but it is the cold hard reality that Congress or Washington is all about a game of priorities, like you guys said, and I'm also frustrated that we have such limited options when it comes to instilling a sense of urgency and conveying this sense of importance and the critical need to those who have the power to make the change in Washington. We only have so many options to let them know and move them to act on it. So I hate to sound like a broken record, but I think of the options presented before us, the most effective way to do that, to get our census across, is to let them know repeatedly that we need this passed. We need them to take a look at this, and we need them to understand that it's urgent and it could lead to a death. It could lead to a grave change in somebody's life, and that's not just a singular person. But then again, you know, Congress has failed to pass the federal budget in more than 100 times in the past, I don't know, 20 years or so. So
yeah, look what happens. Look what happened with COVID.
Exactly,
and is happening.
Exactly.
And, so,
and I worry because I'm sure you guys are more aware than I am. But when it comes to a national health crisis like this, those who are underinsured and uninsured can't even, you know, try to go to the hospital and get treated, let alone get vaccinated.
And there are plenty of undocumented, impacted adoptees that are in that situation, I'm sure.
Right, because, you know, even for the smallest of healthcare visits, You typically need an identification. So let's say you, and I've talked about this before, we had an adoptee at one point that had an abscessed tooth. And by the time he was able to find a dentist that could address it, you usually need an antibiotic for that afterwards. And this is a sort of a, it could be a deadly thing. But if you don't have an identification, how are you going to get prescriptions? You can't even pick up your prescription. So even if you can get in to see a physician who will sort of, you know, see you anyway without your identification, if you are needing medication of any kind from a pharmacy, you're not going to get it if you don't have an identification that is, you know, adequate.
Yeah. Yeah. So you make such a, you know, we make a great point about how this is literally a life and death issue. And I do think that we should have hope, you know, as we've talked about how we're getting increasing amounts of awareness and support. And we've learned a lot of lessons about what we need to do, but sometimes it's a calculation on the point of the politicians to say, I'm not going to spend time on a bill that I don't think is going to get passed. And that's why I feel like there's that like unwritten rule of you need to show X amount of support for the bill to even have a committee hearing, because to them, they feel, you know, if they have five people supporting this bill and we only have, you know, we have a finite amount of time and energy, why spend time on that bill?
Well, you're right.
And that sucks. I hate saying that. But that's sort of like the cold reality of why we spent so much time, or maybe not me personally, but a lot of people, you know, Joy and Rana and Sung Kwan have spent so much time trying to get support for it. Because if it was simply an issue of saying, look at how, you know, it's as simple as doing X, Y, and Z, because honestly, this is a fairly simple bill, right? And when you look at it, and it will save X, Y amount of lives or, you know, fix the problem. If it were as simple as just laying that out and passing a bill, then it would have been done. But it's not that simple, right? Unfortunately. But I do think that, you know, Rana, you make a point that there is, you feel a little safer with this incoming administration, just a little bit safer. And hopefully that'll be true. You know, and I've said this, you know, I've been saying this to people, but I would much rather try to advocate with the Democratic Party than with the Republican Party, right? And I think at least with this Biden administration, even though I'm not saying that I feel like they're going to give that there's like a huge chance, there's a better chance that we're going to be able to get this passed under a Biden administration than we would any Republican administration. I just think that's a fact.
I'm hoping it's going to be a safer environment, but I do think we need to task the State Department with them having an open dialogue with immigration, USIS, because they don't talk so nicely to adoptees. You know, there's scare tactics. Mm-hmm. You know, they act like we're illegal. Sometimes in these conversations, they don't even really identify you as an adoptee. And so there's not been any sensitivity in dealing with this population. And so I'm hoping going into a new administration that maybe the dialogue will be better and they'll be more conscious of our plight. And you know, because when I look at the DACA population, you know, I know there's a little bit of similarity, but there's a vast difference, you know, as to how we came here through policy and all that. But they have protections. Like nobody's protecting or looking out for us at this point. And that's the thing that also frustrates me is that in the 4 years that I've been with Adopt Your Rights Campaign and I've been in this issue so much and with other impact adoptees that nobody is looking out for this population. We're the only ones looking out for ourselves. Like we're the only ones that are showing up and demanding and asking for change. I just feel like sometimes I'm so frustrated because the government agencies just aren't walking in step with us and saying, you know, we're going to support this and this is what we're doing to help you. And I feel like that's what's been missing as well through this entire journey of not having citizenship.
No, it's true.
I hope that happens, because even if there isn't any sort of change other than that, that's still a good change, you know, because it'll at least maybe you'll feel like there's a little bit more support or care, right, given to the population. And that's important.
Well, on the legislative front, I do see a little bit of, I guess, rays of hope in that we had a few, I guess, committee leaders and party leaders or certain caucus leaders who supported the bill in this Congress, which hopefully would translate into more weight behind getting support for the bill. And, you know, we had a really broad coalition of supporters, both in Congress and outside of Congress, for this issue too, right? I mean, among the co-sponsors, we have one of the most progressive or some of the most progressive members co-sponsoring it at the same time as some of the most progressive members, most conservative members, supporting the bill. And we've had several religious groups and other adoption and adoptee rights advocates joining forces together with us to help bring this bill across the finish line. So hopefully we'll keep the momentum, and hopefully with the new administration, there will be a new sense, new atmosphere, not only politically, but, you know, culturally across the United States, for people like Rana to feel safer to really be yourself and go back to, you know, your normal life that you had a few years ago.
I think that's so important, what Rana has said in terms of the air of safety, you know, the ability to breathe a little bit more, to relax a little bit more, to not have it just, you know, sort of a 24/7, you know, constant sense of anxiety over this issue. That's really important. I wanted to mention too that when Sung Kwan a while back was referring to, you know, our goals going into this prior Congress, of having, you know, an early introduction, I wanted to tack on to that to say that one of our goals was also to have a language that was the broadest of sorts. If we remember, the bill that came out in the 115th Congress had exclusions at introduction, and that was a shock, I know, to everyone, and it was very concerning. It's not something that was initially expected. And then obviously the bill didn't, you know, really even garner, you know, it made its progress, but it certainly didn't garner the support. So I think it's interesting to, and important to note that this year, one of the largest, you know, accomplishments right out of the gate was that we got the bill that was, you know, introduced, you know, in 2015. So the language reverted to the most expansive version. And not only that, so that was, you know, first accomplishment, but by the end of the year, we also have had the most amount of sponsors for it. So I think that's telling too, to say, you know, this language is important. And even, you know, in all of these political difficulties, you know, with the COVID and the immigration and the partisanship, we have still managed to, you know, double our sponsorship over the last Congress, as well as, you know, increase the language, expand the language.
Yeah.
So I think that that's telling, and I think it's really important. And on that note, I would say that I did meet with the co-sponsors from Congressman Smith's office, and I'm under the impression that they intend to reintroduce again very quickly. That is their hope to reintroduce early on in the year, as we said before, the challenge is finding a Republican co-sponsor. And so they've got some ideas on that and are definitely already working sure. on that. So, you know, that's our challenge. But I think they also, it's my understanding that they are looking to keep the bill language, to reintroduce the same language.
That's really, really good news.
Let's move on that, you know, momentum. Let's keep it going. I think that it's the most consistent thing. That's what we need.
Yeah. It's also, I think it's shown that it can garner support, as you mentioned, Joy. But I think just from a standpoint of you have to go for like, everything you want or almost everything you want up front, right? Don't negotiate with yourself before you negotiate with, you know, the other side, right? In a sense, like, and just, you know, and it makes me really glad that you feel that Congressman Smith will be introducing sort of the current bill and the most expansive language as possible. Because that's just that's what we want, and you don't introduce something with compromises already. That's just how I feel about it.
Well, I mean, nobody wants to, of course, but I would like to just remind everyone that we don't have control over that. what our job has been is to, you know, to make the policymakers aware of the impact of the language and how these things will roll out, and how language, even the smallest of sort of cuts, really come down to separating and dividing families. And that's what this is all about, mm-hmm. right? It's about, mm-hmm. you know, the integrity of these families that are Americans. These are American families. These are American citizens who have adopted family members. And, you know, and then, you know, these adoptees have grown up and had, you know, children who are Americans. And so this is the American family unit. And, you know, we need our families, we need our communities. And so, you know, families and communities all across the nation are affected by this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And obviously, we on this podcast and advocates do not write the bills, write the language of the bills. But I just think it's great that we feel like he's going to be introducing, you know, better language that we feel better about than not.
Right. Of course. Of course, that's always the goal.
So is to advocate for that. For right. sure.
So going forward, we have a lot of challenges. You know, they're winding back up is always, you know, a big task. But there are a lot of organizations, as we said earlier in the podcast here, that have come on board. And I just feel like what I would like people to know is that if you want to get involved, there are so many different ways to do that in your own community or in your own comfort area with so many organizations. And we're putting together a list, and we'll continue to do that and mm-hmm. update it of the coalitions of the various coalitions. I would say that the National Alliance for Adoptee Equality is really the first national consortium of organizations across the nation. So that's something new, and that's a step of progress, I think. We continue to work on updating our list of organizations and where they're located so that people can know where they can go to get involved. They don't have to only get involved with Adoptee Rights Campaign or only get involved with Adoptees for Justice or, you know, or whomever. They can, you know, the goal is for all of our communities to be working on this regardless of you know, and if there's one particular issue that you feel is, you know, more inclined or, you know, to advocate for, if you are particularly affected more by, you know, one aspect of this bill than the other, I think that's totally fine. I think what we need, mm-hmm. we need mm-hmm. all hands on deck. And so if you want to advocate, you want to get involved, please do so. And do not feel like you have to choose or, have it all one way or all another way. We totally need your help. Adoptees need your help. you know, if you have a penchant for this, come forward and help out wherever you are.
Yeah, 100%. And we'll have, we'll list that. We'll have links to those lists and to the various organizations in the show notes as well. So, you know, we don't want to mention it and then make it hard for you to find. So we'll make it as easy to find as we can. I guess just you know, we're gonna wrap this conversation up, and I've had such a great time, and you know, I'm, you know, thankful for all of you for having, you know, to raising your voice and being on this, especially you, Rana. You know, you're the most at risk of any one of us, and you know, it really is, you know, I think brave of you to come forward. And so I guess, like, you know, just going forward, right, with the advocacy and sort of and what's going on, what's going to be happening, could Joy mention sort of like how you like some of the organizations, you know, we've mentioned National Alliance for Adoptee Equality, we've mentioned the Korean American Grassroots Conference. So I guess if you could just mention how you feel, like, what are the options of getting involved? Maybe if you don't want to be like part of a coalition specifically, what other ways can people help?
Sure. Well, on the coalition side, you know, as we know, A4J is still working on this. And I think that, you know, they have a specific interest in adoptees who have been deported. And I, you know, I think that that's all part of this issue.
Oh yeah, 100%.
You know, so I think that their work is valuable, and you know, they're not going anywhere. And so there's, you know, they're around as well. I know there are a number of in the Korean communities, there are a number of consulates that are also sort of involved in the communities. They have limits as to what they, you know, their involvement can do or can be. But if you're within the Korean community and you need to know, and you know, where to get involved, that's one place you can start. The other place is really just reaching out to your own members of Congress and, you know, having this conversation. And when I say reaching out, what I really mean to say is having a consistent dialogue with your members of Congress. You know, the amount of contact between a constituent and a congressperson is very, very limited, right? There's not a lot of access. And so you have to be persistent. And, you know, this is an issue that you really, you know, it's wonderful if you care about this issue and you're going to sign a petition and you even make a phone call. But it's even better if you make a commitment to do this, you know, on a weekly basis or a monthly basis or whatever it takes. You know, unfortunately, you know, this is just where we're at with, you know, our system.
And is there any particular method of contacting them that you feel is more effective, that they listen to more, or is it more about the consistency of just doing it, you know, on a weekly or a monthly basis?
Right. Well, I think that we all have different degrees of capacity, right? And so some of us can only make phone calls, and some of us, mm-hmm. especially during COVID, you know, we right. can only write letters. But, you know, COVID's been an interesting time. I do happen to know that more members have been available by video.
Oh, really? Yeah. By Zoom or whatever?
Yes. So more requests have been granted for meetings with members because they've been more available. So that's interesting. But I think, you know, to whatever one's capacity is, I've often heard people say, well, I really don't have the time to be going to my representative's office. And so that's okay. If you can, you know, maybe set up a you know, sort of an email chain or something of that nature. There's so many different ways. Constant, consistent, persistent is what we're looking
okay.
for.
Awesome. But did anyone have sort of broad ideas or maybe even specific sort of points that people should make when, calling their congressperson or even just talking to a friend or member of the family that is not aware of what's going on?
Well, as an impacted person, one, I think it's always helpful to lean on other impacted adoptees.
Okay.
Just for the support and understanding, you know, because you're on the same journey, it's difficult, and you need the emotional support for it. Sometimes you're not getting that from your family. There seems to be a lot of dysfunction there with impacted adoptees and families, especially with this issue. It can kind of make it uncomfortable. And yeah, definitely reach out to your congressperson, get them familiar with your case. I've reached out to my congressperson over the years to help me with my different paperwork to get it going. Sometimes stuff gets stuck or I don't have help on anything, and it just kind of helps lighten the burden that the adoptee has with constantly shuffling paperwork, looking for things. I think a lot of impact adoptees spend a lot of time shuffling paper. It's really frustrating. So my recommendation is there. Also, another thing that adoptees have done in the past and still continue to do is they advocate and they share their stories to the media. Like, they will take it upon themselves in their local area and reach out to mm-hmm. their news team and ask them if they would like the story. And that's been a really good way as well to kind of get national exposure to our stories. And so that's another way, or to a local newspaper. So I just have to commend all of the adoptees over the last 4 years for being brave and strong and stepping forward out of the shadows, because that's kind of where we've been, you know, because just there's been so much fear, you know, and there's not been a lot of happening. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've all found our voices, and we're going to continue the march to DC, and we're going to demand the change, and it's going to happen.
It will. Yes.
It's, you know, we're just going to just have to keep at it and just stay hopeful.
Well, I think I just want to, you know, make sure to thank KAGC for, you know, your partnership. It's just made an immense difference. I think I've said that before. Words seem to, you know, be inadequate to express our gratitude and really just the amount of growth that we've seen as a result of your support and your friendship and your partnership and your sponsorship of this issue. It really just took our capacity and our our work and just amplified it tenfold. It's just been really amazing. Thank you so much for your partnership and your work.
Well, thank you for the kind words, and really thank you more importantly for the trust that you've shared with me and KAGC over the past 2 years. I really appreciate you always including KAGC as well as me to these efforts, whether it be in-person events or podcasts like this. I really appreciate it. And as an ally and as an advocate, I'm always trying to learn how I can better serve as an effective ally and not get in the way of the actually impacted people presenting their cases and bravely, courageously stepping forward. And I've learned a lot, and I'm still learning a lot, but I really, really appreciate all the lessons and friendship and partnership, and again, the trust that you've shared with me.
Thank you. And Adam, thank you too. Thank you, Plan A Magazine, for the amount of time and effort that you're putting into these sessions. I know that I was thinking about this earlier. We originally began to talk about doing this podcast, what, like 3 years ago?
Something like that. Crazy like that.
And I think, though, I want to say that I think that these things take time to evolve. Our change, our culture, our politics, everything does change quite quickly. And I think our idea was that every time we would sort of sit down and say, okay, maybe now is the time to do this, before we knew it, something else had, you know, massively changed this sort of landscape. And we were sort of going back to the drawing board each and every time. So I think it was really sort of even though we didn't understand, you know, we couldn't have foretold this, I think it was best for us to wait and allow the situation to evolve. And I think the way that we were able to do this in three pieces and cover this issue, we titled this The Manufactured Crisis. And I sort of see it that way because, you know, governments are the ones that issue citizenship. And so that means two things. Failed citizenship is an aspect of manufacturing. And also on the upside of this, it can be solved. It's not an unsolvable issue because there is a body to do it. And so this is not an unsolvable thing. And so
Absolutely. It
is manufactured in the sense that it's a problem, but it can also be manufactured to be made right.
Yeah, that's an amazing point. An amazing point. And I think a good hopeful point to end on. So thanks for the kind words as well for me and for the magazine. I'm just thankful that I think Joy, you reached out to me probably 3 or 4 years ago to learn about this and become involved. I'm thankful that you did that. And that I've learned about this, because honestly, this was something that I just didn't even know wasn't a problem, and that my fellow adoptees were affected by this and suffering under this manufactured crisis. And so it's been a privilege for me to be able to, you know, be given the trust to help advocate for it. So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
But yeah, so thanks. Thanks everyone for listening and for your support. And there'll be many links to information, as we've mentioned. Thanks everyone for being on the pod.